Smell is definitely not the first sense that you think about when it comes to houseplants and gardening, but let me tell you, plant friend, it is one of the most powerful of the senses that we can use in our gardens to cultivate joy and calm. In my book, Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Happiness, I dedicated an entire chapter just to learning how to engage our sense of smell with plants, because I think it's the most underappreciated scent when it comes to our visually appealing houseplant collections and gardens. It's the scents radiating from the soil that can actually be restorative when it comes to gardening. And let's be honest, when it comes to houseplants, I don't think there's anything more joyful than growing a Hoya or an orchid that has scented flowers. My research for the book opened my eyes to the world of scents and plants, something that I really didn't know much about before that. And I made this episode today for us to learn how our sense of smell has one of the strongest associations with the part of our brain that is associated with long-term memories and emotions. So today, in an effort to help our community cultivate the most restorative, most joyful gardening season they've had yet, we dive into an unexpected topic, gardening for aroma. Welcome to the Growing Joy podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives. I'm Maria, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, an epic plant killer turned happy plant lady. On Growing Joy, you'll find conversations about plant care, plant community, and wellness through the lens of plants. Plant care is self-care on Growing Joy, the podcast. Hello, plant friends. I hope you've had beautifully planned 2 weeks as we are in the throes of spring, blooming and growing joy. Let's open today's episode up with a little moment of reflection. What scent in your life brings you immediately to a moment in your past? Which scent just transports you to a memory like you're right back there, like you can almost feel it? Is it the scent of a relative that brings you to a time that they took care of you? Or maybe it's the scent of your favorite tree or plant that lived outside of an old home? Maybe it's a particular deodorant or perfume that transports you back to a relationship or, for me, a particular year of high school. Scent is so powerful. For me, geraniums transport me back to my nonni's little greenhouse that she had in her home in Queens. Basil brings me back to Mama Fiala's garden. And a very particular brand of deodorant takes me back to summer camp where I had my first crush on a boy who used a very strongly scented body spray. Now that we've framed the importance or the strength of smell, I'm so excited to introduce you to today's guest who's dedicated her life to scent, Amy Anthony, a certified clinical aromatherapist and aromatic gardener who left her career in marketing research to pursue what is closest to her heart, working with plants. She's a certified aromatherapist, aromatherapy educator, herbalist, gardener, a certified master composter, and an artisanal distiller. Amy knows a thing or two about scents, a lot about scents. We dive into the nitty-gritty in this conversation, so bear with us as, you know, hang in there for the first 20 minutes as we kind of pick apart the science of scent. But the cool thing about Amy is, yeah, she knows a lot about scent, but she also knows a lot about gardening. She has an enormous aromatic garden that serves as her scented muse. I hope this episode inspires you to grow a scented plant that you haven't tried before, whether it's indoors or outdoors. If you need extra support, I have a whole chapter, like I said, in my book, Growing Joy, with lists of scented indoor and outdoor plants that you can try. That book is available anywhere books are sold. All right, get your nostrils ready, or really get your memories ready, as you're about to learn, as we dive in to the concept of aromatic gardening. Amy, welcome to Growing Joy.
Thank you for having me, Maria. I am very excited to spend time with you.
I'm excited to spend time with you, too. When I was writing my book, I have a chapter on smell, and reading about the olfactory system and how powerful it is really fascinated me. And I feel like as houseplant parents, we don't think about smell as much as we think about, you know, our other senses. So I can't wait to dive in with you today. So to get started, Amy, I know that you are the aromatic plant lady. Can you kind of give us a sense of how you became this very specific, very niche expert in aromatherapy?
Thank you. It's fun. And it sounds so sexy, but honestly, I was a gardener since I was a kid. I have a favorite picture of mine of me squatting down with a trowel. I must be 5 years old with a big smile on my face. And it was just a way of life. Growing up in the Hudson Valley of New York. And then I always was with nature. We go hiking and camping when I was younger. And plants were always a part of my life. I, you know, moved to New York City in 1999, needed to be by plants. I felt ungrounded. I knew if I joined the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, I would go read the paper there. So is this a need I had? And then I was in the corporate world, you know, life happens, and I was like still seeking. I wanted to be an herbalist. Didn't happen. And then I quit my job, J-O-B. Aromatherapy found me in 2012, and I started studying, and I was gardening at the time. I was spending time out east on Long Island. And it really is like a love of plants, getting to the joy of them, being around them, the connection. And then as an aromatherapist, I need to be able to know the plants when I'm teaching, because I am a teacher. As a practitioner, I have to understand the plants. So I was listing for a conversation all the plants, I couldn't list them all, that are aromatic in our yard. So I just gave you a lot right there.
Yeah. So getting licensed in aromatherapy, what does that look like? Because when I think of aromatherapy, I think of essential oils. I would assume it's more expansive than that. And I just don't know what I don't know.
That's a great question. And one thing that's really interesting you brought up is we're not licensed. We become certified. So it's a dicey territory. We go to organizations to set standards like the Alliance of International Aromatherapists, which I'm the New York State rep for. So we have governing bodies that aren't accredited. You know, they're not registered. It's like being a yoga, certified yoga teacher. So we can't practice internal medicine. We can't make medical claims, but we work with people's health concerns. So it's interesting. We do work with essential oils. You were right about that.
And when you say aromatherapy found you, how did it find you?
I think similar to you getting to meet you, I was curious. We've established I've loved the plants. I need to be by them. I was so happy this week and my fingernails were dirty again because I was outside weeding. But aromatherapy found me in the quote sense that I think I bought a bottle of eucalyptus and I was like hearing about this and like it was probably 2012, earlier than that. And I was like putting it in my humidifier. I'm like, if I'm using this, I need to learn about it. What is this stuff? Where does it come from? How is it derived? Bought books. You know, I have my first book I bought from the Barnes & Noble at Union Square. And it was just curiosity and this obsession.
I love that.
Yeah. The universe was opening its doors and I kept saying yes to use that language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, you know, you talk about that craving of having to be around plants. And to me, aromatherapy is just that other, like another opportunity to reconnect with nature when we're in cities, when we're living in these, my husband calls them ant farms, you know, like we live in ant farms, these huge apartment, you know, complexes in New York City. It's so unnatural. We're surrounded by white paint. We're surrounded by computers and screens and VOCs. And, you know, my community, you know, we turn to nature and we get that craving fixed through filling our homes with houseplants. But that aromatherapy is kind of the next opportunity. So I think aromatherapy does kind of have a bad rap sometimes with these oil, you know, companies that end up being MLMs with, you know, all these crazy conspiracies, not conspiracies, but lawsuits and dramas and that kind of stuff. But the simple science behind the olfactory system, which is kind of what kind of blew my mind when I was doing my research for my book, it's simple and practical and straightforward. Can you kind of talk about the olfactory system and scent and memory and why scent and aroma can be so useful for us?
I love the question. And I just want to touch quickly back on something you said about reconnecting with nature. And that's something I realized on my path is aromatherapy is a way, like you said, to connect with nature when you are in a city, in an office building. So that's a big realization I had during my path. But the olfactory system, I took up some of my slides, my teaching slides. And when we talk about olfaction and aromatherapy, it's a multi-layered cake, as I like to describe it, because a lot of folks think of essential oils as woo-woo. And this is chemistry. We're talking about chemicals derived from plants. We obtained, this is carrot seed essential oil I'm holding up. We took carrot seed from the carrot plant, all the seeds, pounds and pounds and pounds, and you take that and put it into a still, and you distill it. And over the still, carried on steam, comes only the most volatile, light, lipid-loving components plus the steam. So that's part of the olfactory part. To smell something, it must be so tiny, like 5, 10, 15 carbons or less. Or I say less, like 10 or 15 carbons and really light things that's like vapor. You can't see it. That's why it's called essential, right? So I'm already going down this path. It's a big path of talking about distillation to understand the essential oil. But to get back to the multi-layered cake, so when we smell something and we smell these very volatile and actually lipid-loving, the scent molecules will attach to scent receptors dangling down, exposed to air, right? This is what catches the molecules. And we have this bone called the cribriform plate that's protecting, there's the epithelial tissue that's there with the nerves hanging down. So this tissue can take in olfactory chemicals too, as well as go in the nerve endings. And then we have a bone, thin bone that's protecting cortical tissue. That's separating you from the world. And your nerves are going into the olfactory bulb. And when you go in the olfactory bulb, you have two of them. We get the nerve signals say, oh, recognition. And this starts to tie into the whole cascade of what's about to happen. So there's molecules going into onto the nerve endings and can go through that olfactory epithelium, the soft tissue. And what happens is we get odor recognition. So odor recognition and memory formation goes to the hippocampus directly. So we can start to form new memories, say, oh, this reminds me of something that's part of this hippocampus, and it goes around the back of the skull. This also goes to the thalamus, which is the major integration center of our brain for all sensorial experiences, sight, touch, sound, smell. We also go to the amygdaloid complex. So your centers of like fear, excitement, the raw animal energy, like reaction, part of stress. And we also go to the, hippocampus, hypothalamus, which is your main regulator of so much. It's the main like CEO of your brain, of communication between internal and external. All this is happening with essential oils. When you're smelling these chemicals, they're getting, and plants. If you're smelling fennel seed, this, a lot's happening.
So can we zoom back for a minute? I love all these details. This is great. The nerdy stuff is amazing. But high level for someone who is just, you know, let's zoom out high level. I smell something. I have sensors in my nose that attach to the molecules, these tiny little molecules that are the actual scent. The sensors, they attach to the sensors in my nose. And then my nose basically is a straight shot to my brain that different parts of the brain that are associated with memory. It sounded like fight or flight, the amygdala.
Memory, emotions, and then we get to the deep level of inhaling these things, these molecules, whether or not they're an essential oil. If they're small enough, they potentiate, they work with our nervous system, and they can actually, some of them get into the blood-brain barrier through that. And then we inhale these. When we inhale, we have scent recognition. All that's happening. Plus, it's going into our bloodstream through our lungs. So there's scent becomes us, in quotes.
I love that. So I remember reading something, and I don't know if this is right, so we can cut it if it's wrong. But isn't there something with the olfactory system? Because scent, like your nose is literally close to your brain. It's like one of the strongest connections to your brain of your senses. Is that true?
I would say yes. And I'm going to say that and just read. It's the first part of your brain to be developed, the olfactory sense. The olfactory sense plus taste, it's chemical based and it's instant. It just two synapses away from cortical tissue. We could get more nerdy here. The olfactory part of your brain is also involved with, and I have to fact check this, I have it written down, part of your sexual development. It's very integrated at the fetal level when you're so little.
And the hormonal, yeah.
Yeah, it's so chemical based. I think a lot of folks don't think of scent as this integrated thing. I think a lot of us still think it's just the stuff outside of us.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can definitely speak to like scent and memory. Some of my strongest memories I have from childhood are from scents. They're like, I don't have visual memories of my grandma's greenhouse. But every time I smell a geranium, because my grandma had tons of geraniums in her greenhouse, I am transported to her house in Queens. And I can't see it, but like I can't see the specifics. I can't see the geraniums, but I have this like memory of being young in her greenhouse, seeing all the green. But it's that scent that triggers that memory for me beyond any visuals, which really fascinates me. And also, like, you know, different deodorants I've worn at different times of life. Like there's a certain deodorant I wore when I was 12. And whenever I smell it, like I'm back at summer camp, you know, it's very interesting.
You know, what I like to say is that scent transports you. It time travels, like you're saying. You can literally go back in time in a matter of a second to your grandmother's greenhouse. It happens because it's so set integrated into your memory, like you're saying. It is so powerful. And we can use that therapeutically, not just in aromatherapy, but with stress. If you can bring someone back to a good place in life through scent, what a gift. You can have an aromatic garden in your apartment, jasmine plant growing. You know, why not?
If you're planting up your garden or doing some spring houseplant care in the next couple of months, I want you to look no further than Espoma Organic for all of your potting mix, garden soil, and fertilizer needs. Espoma is a 90-year-old family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet. We know I love Espoma. I've been talking about them for years on this podcast. All my plants are potted up in Espoma potting mix. I use all their products. As you plant up your garden this year, you're going to use their potting mix or their garden soil suited for your specific setup, whether you're container gardening, raised bed gardening, in-ground gardening. They have specific mixes created just for whatever the type of garden you have. Then you're going to use their compost. When you plant your garden up, make sure that you use their Biotone starter plant food, which helps your plants establish faster and reduces transplant loss. I sprinkle a little bit of it in every container that I plant up for my balcony garden. And then as the summer progresses, you're going to continue to feed your plants with their line of fertilizers, which is called Tones. They're kind of famous for their tones. They have Holly Tone, which is the thing they were super famous for, but they have Garden Tone, Vegetable Tone, Flower Tone, Bulb Tone, Citrus Tone, whatever you're growing, they've got a tone for it. And that's specifically, you know, created for the plants that you're growing. If you're a houseplant parent, you're going to keep it simple with their general potting mix, or you can use their succulent and cacti mix, their orchid mix, their African violet mix. They've got a mix for any type of houseplant you want to grow, maybe even bonsai. And then you can use their liquid indoor houseplant food to easily and effortlessly fertilize your houseplants. I love working with Espoma. The company is run by really nice people, family, like I said, fourth generation family owned and operated. And to top it all off, they love the planet. They have a huge sustainability commitment with 100% solar powered plant, zero waste manufacturing, and eco-friendly packaging. To learn more about their indoor and outdoor products, visit Espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or you can click the link in the show notes, which will take you to my Amazon storefront where I have a list of my favorite Espoma products for you to check out. Mother's Day is around the corner, plant friends, and Wind River Chimes is going to make your life a freaking breeze by delivering the most magical, most thoughtful, oh yeah, and personalized gift straight to your door. Wind River creates premium, handcrafted, and hand-tuned wind chimes, which are designed for exceptional precision and lasting beauty. For over 35 years, Wind River has been passionately pursuing harmony by delivering wind chimes that help create a peaceful, soothing, restful environment. You heard the wind chime in the intro to this ad. Don't you think it would make the most fantastic gift? Mama Fiella is redoing her lanai in Florida, and she has already put in a request for the wind chimes when the lanai is done. So she'll definitely be getting one for Mother's Day. A wind chime is the perfect gift because every time the recipient hears the gorgeous chimes singing in the wind, they're going to think of you, and they're going to be gifted a moment of calm, and they'll associate that moment of calm with you, plant friend. See where I'm going here? It's the gift that keeps on giving. So with Mother's Day coming up and Memorial Day coming up, it would be such a magical gift. Plus, Wind River is offering a free engraving on all of their Corinthian bells. So head to windriverchimes.com to listen to all of the different melodious options and use the code GROWINGJOY at checkout.
at windriverchimes.com for a free engraving on their Corinthian bells to add a special personalized element to your gift. They come in a variety of colors, sizes, and sounds, so head to their website to explore, windriverchimes.com, with code GROWINGJOY at checkout for a free engraving on all Corinthian bells.
Okay, so aromatic gardening, let's talk about that, the convergence of gardening and aromatherapy. So this is a known practice. It's the first I've learned about it after learning about you.
It's just what it is. You know, it's like I obsess about aromatic plants because I am an aromatherapist. And as a practicality, you know, you're up in the Catskills, right? You might be gardening and you have deer. You want things to deter those guys nibbling on your plants. They generally do not touch aromatic plants. And those stinky aromatics, they love roses. They love the flowers, but they'll stay away from like sage, thyme, lavender, yarrow, lemon balm, lemon verbena. And part of it too is, as a gardener, a lot of these plants, when they flower, are attractants. Or even when they're not flowering and the essential oils or aromatics can be in the, you know, leaves, that's like saying stay away or come get me. So there might be fennel blooming and that says to a predatory wasp, come here, come feed. You could use aromatic plants to create a barrier to keep, like I said, deer away or to attract actually. And that's a part of the plant's life, is creating these chemicals to help the plant thrive. And you as a gardener can really work with that and have fun with it.
Yeah. It's funny. I tried to do a garden outdoors this year and I tried to make it deer resistant. And it was very interesting. The lavenders, the salvias, and the sage, they did not touch. And every flower I tried to grow, they just like devoured. It was crazy. But it was very interesting. So aromatic gardening, like tell me more. What does that look like?
So for me, I think it's a personal term, because some folks, I think when you hear that, you might think of things that smell pretty. And I'm really focused on plants that bear essential oils, and that's a really specific term. To get a little nerdy in quotes, when we work with essential oils, they're terpene based. Some folks might know that word through cannabis and a lot of research and buzz around cannabinoids and terpenes. Terpenes are in essential oils. So I'm really looking at those plants that can be obtained through essential oils being distilled. This is very specific. I don't grow rose, even though that can be an essential oil. I don't grow lilies. I don't grow any of that stuff because the deer eat everything, you know? So this is like a really personal term. So aromatic gardening really is focusing on these essential oil bearing, a lot of them herbally medicinal plants that the hedgehogs, groundhogs don't eat, the rabbits don't eat, the deer don't eat. And that's honestly what it is.
I think you just got everyone's attention with plants that your local mammals don't eat. So what are you growing in your garden?
Yay! So I've tried to focus on over the years native plants and trying to get to know them, like who's hanging out, right? So two native aromatics are bayberry, and that's really, a lot of people know bayberry candles, maybe, really historical. Sweet fern is someone I've grown in love with. If you can find sweet fern, Comptonia peregrina is the Latin name. So let me just read. This is only a small list. I have catmint, catnip, calamintha, gorgeous, yarrow, thyme, lemon balm, patchouli, coriander, German and Roman chamomile, two types of angelica, lovage, white sage, clary sage, common sage, types of lavender, hyssop, winter savory, two types of centolina, marjoram, and that's not it. There's more.
Wow. I mean, those are all a lot of culinary herbs too, which is nice.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. Tell me more about the plants that people can plant to avoid pests or to avoid deer.
You hit the nose on what you were saying with your garden. The ones that are really stinky, in quotes, that really give that throw of the lavender, they're irritating to the, I think, the olfactory system. Anything minty in the mint family. So if you guys want to geek out with me, or y'all want to geek out, the Laneaceae family, that's the mints, peppermint, spearmint, rosemary falls in there, lavender, the sages. I'm pausing because if you go to the umbel family, the carrot seed family, the fennels, that attracts a lot of insects, and you'll find that a lot of critters will stay away from those because they're just so darn smelly. But stick with you can't go wrong if you're really getting out there first with the mint family, the Lamiaceae family. And two things, and you might have found this out already. It goes into groups that can, in that family, you have your hardwoods, which need sun, they need neglect, they need thin soil. You don't want to put compost on them. That's rosemary. That's lavender. But, you know, guess who doesn't mind a little wet, a little shade, some thymes, some peppermints, the spearmints. So it's like kind of just getting to know who likes what and then let them do their thing, and no one's going to eat them except you.
So is there a way that we can grow aromatic plants and then distill them into oil, like, and use their oils at home? Like, is that an easy thing to do?
So yes and no. You can make a really rudimentary still, and you could find this stuff on YouTube, to get your hydrosol. So when you distill, you're getting the whole steam thing with your aromatics, and you need a lot of plant material to get the essential oil. So at home, you're going to get the aromatic water. And just do a search on YouTube for like making your own rose water or rose hydrosol. And what you do is you just take a pot of water on your stove. You put your plants inside the pot, and then you put your lid on inverse. And you want to start collecting that vapor that's going to drip down, and you need to collect that vapor. And on top of your lid, you put ice. So you're just making this really rudimentary still with heat and then cooling it with that ice. And you can make rose water.
Very cool. So you're mentioning that you're personally, your definition of aromatic gardening is garden because you have a non-rudimentary way of, you're growing for the oils, right? What are other reasons why people might want to consider adding aromatic plants into their garden?
So it's a great question. And one of the first things that comes to mind is joy. When you get to be interactive and you, at that time of day, walk by something that smells, let's say it's magnolia, or, you know, daffodils too have a smell. When you get that, what happens? You might stop, pause, take a breath, smile. Like, that's super restorative and super healing. I was thinking that it's also when you plant, you're planting to benefit nature. Plant these for the insects that come and pollinate, because it's not just about us. I think a lot of us can get greedy and say, and this is, I'm a trained herbalist too, in a very fundamental way. You want to go and take just enough for your small need, and you want to leave the rest for everybody else. So often I might harvest lemon balm, and I'll harvest one plant or parts of one plant for tea, and then I'll keep the rest there for all the insects I see, and they're busy getting their nectar. They're busy helping the plant. So it's for you, for the wildlife, and then we already touched upon it, that attract and repel thing, because there's that chemical language that happens between insects and plants that's been going on for a long time.
Yeah, because you could potentially plant a whole barrier of sage and salvia as a like barrier to protect your tomatoes or to protect the plants, you know, that the deer are always going to want to eat, which sounds like a really cool natural way to try and mitigate. I don't want to keep calling them pests, but animals and, you know, people who are going to eat your garden that, you know, we all know who they are. So I am not interested in making my own essential oils. I will buy yours, or I will buy a company's essential oils. I do love essential oils. Actually, I just got a bird, and my bird is in my office now, so I can't diffuse essential oils in my office anymore. However, before Frankie came into my life, I have a humidifier and I diffuse oil every day in my office. When I was doing my research for my book, I fell in love with the hinoki tree and hinoki oil. And the entire year of writing my book, I diffused hinoki oil every day in my office and or eucalyptus. And I got into like a mad scientist moment where like depending on what mood I was in and what how I needed to level myself, I would like put eucalyptus in if I wanted to feel energized. You know, I would maybe use a little bit of lavender at the end of the day to calm down. Hinoki was like my scent that I, when I smelled it, I was like, we're focused, we're writing, we're going for it. So I'm interested in adding aromatics into my garden for wellness. And how fitting that you are an aromatherapist. So what would you recommend for, what are you smelling right now?
Hinoki.
You are? You're smelling hinoki. It's so good. Lemony, piney. It's like so amazing. And there's all these crazy research that shows if you, especially for sleep, that hinoki can really help sleep, help all sorts of stuff. I mean, there's a great book by Dr. King Lee called Forest Bathing, and he has a whole chapter on hinoki. But so, Amy, you keep referring to essential oils and like you're there for the oils. And I think I'm misinterpreting what you're saying. So you're growing these plants for their essential oils, the oils that they produce. But are you growing them? I assume that you meant that you're going to take the plants and turn them all into literal, you know, essential oil bottles. But you mentioned tea that you brew. You mentioned like, what are the other ways that you work with these aromatic plants besides distilling them when you talk about working with the oils?
Thank you for clarifying, because I don't think I was clear before. When I am having the plants, I invite them to live in the space. And then I want some of them to grow and do what they're doing to be part of nature. And then I might harvest for tea. I might specifically harvest them to create the hydrosol. And I don't want to mislead people. I don't have enough material to obtain essential oil. It takes so much plant material. So I might obtain nice sized mason jar of hydrosol. So that's what how I'm working. But a lot of it is sometimes I might make a tincture actually. So, but I'm very tea focused for making a stash for the year.
So tea focused. And can you extract and enjoy those oils just from boiling them in a tea? So you're literally ingesting the oils by drinking them.
Yeah, in safe amounts, because with an essential oil, you're taking pounds and pounds of plant material that's so concentrated in a tiny bottle. You just need one drop of something. When I'm harvesting just a few German chamomile flowers, I could take a little tablespoon. And then, by the way, don't put boiling water on your aromatics, just gentle warmth, or even better, in the summertime, overnight cold infusion or 6 hours just in cool water. It's a game changer because hot water brings out bitter, but that's a whole different topic. Yeah, it's the tea, the interacting with the plant, the harvesting it, and just joy.
I started making my own tea for my herb garden last year, and it was the most delightful practice. And I have a friend, Raquel, who came on. She's all about plant magic. She's a little witchy. And so she talks about the different spirits and, you know, how you can work with different herbs for different, you know, moments in your life. And man, I freaking love my lemon balm tea that I make. But you mentioned hydrosols. So you're making your hydrosols. And then what are you doing with the hydrosols? Like your mason jar of hydrosol?
Yeah, it's hydrosols are so beautiful. And for folks, if that's a new word, that's really the forever changed water that's obtained through the distillation process. So I incorporate them into, I make my own cream. I make like facial toner sprays. I work with them in the bath. I cook with them. I sometimes drink them diluted. They're just really versatile. Anytime water is in the equation of your self-care practice, hydrosols can be worked with.
I love the idea of putting it in my bath. Ooh la la, that sounds nice. I'm a big Epsom salt bath girl. I love a bath. So I love the idea of a hydrosol in my bath.
You know what? Lemon balm essential oil is super pricey because it loves to give it, the chemistry is water loving. So you can get a very lovely lemon balm hydrosol and it could smell so gorgeous in the bath.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so we've got the hydrosols and we're focusing on the teas. And before we dive into the different plants, because I definitely want to dive into that with you, for teas, it's really simple, like you said. So you're either putting it in, you're harvesting a handful of whatever you'd like. Let's continue with the lemon balm for a moment. A bundle of lemon balm, you're either putting it overnight, cold distilling, just in room temperature water, and you're just like letting the water kind of pull all of that goodness out, or you're putting it in. I use a French press and I put the plants in, put the hot water, let it steep for about like, how long do you do it for? Like 20 minutes?
So that's it's pleasure tea. You could do a warm to, you know, not boiling 3 to 5 minutes, 7 minutes for the pleasure tea. But if you're looking for the medicinal benefits, you might want to go for that. Not boiling, because you'll boil off the chemistry and the bitterness sets in. Like 15 minutes, let it steep and get really pull that out.
I love that. Raise your hand if you've ever lost a tomato to blight, basil to downy mildew, or your damn local deer keep eating every plant you try and get in the ground. I know my hand is raised to the ceiling for the last one about the deer. They are my inner gardener's arch nemesis. This gardening season, arm yourself with the Vegetable Garden Problem Solver Handbook by veggie growing guru Susan Mulvihill of YouTube Susan's in the Garden. The title of the book says it all, plant friend. It will become your go-to resource for all natural, pesticide-free solutions and troubleshooting for the gardening woes that will inevitably arise in your 2023 garden this year. We all have them. The Vegetable Garden Problem Solver Handbook will help you properly identify over 28 bacterial and fungal diseases like powdery mildew, leaf spot, and potato scab, limit damage from plant-eating animals like birds, rabbits, gophers, and my nemesis, deer, and most importantly, it'll help you set your garden up for success to actually prevent these problems from ever happening. I'm excited to have the Vegetable Garden Problem Solver Handbook as a quick reference from anything that arises in my grow bag garden this summer. I love that I'll just be able to snag the book off my shelf, look up what's going on, and then hopefully remedy it on the spot. You should snag it for yourself and have it as your first defense in the gardening section of your bookshelf. Pick up the Vegetable Garden Problem Solver Handbook by Susan Mulvihill at your favorite local bookstore, bookshop.org, Barnes & Noble, or amazon.com. That's the Vegetable Garden Problem Solver Handbook by Susan Mulvihill, wherever books are sold. The Vegetable Garden Problem Solver Handbook. Have you ever heard of the Manuka tea tree? It's the tree that Manuka honey comes from because it's a single origin honey that comes from bees in New Zealand that feed off of this specific tree. And it's actually called a super honey because it's super rich in antioxidants and prebiotics, actually 3 times more than compared to regular honey. And I have been hooked on it ever since Manukora honey became a sponsor of this podcast months and months ago. I cannot stop putting it in my coffee every morning and just eating it right out of the jar. It's so delicious. The taste of this honey is unlike anything I've ever tasted before. It's so creamy, like the color even looks different. It's so complex in flavor. It's almost caramelly and it makes my coffee almost taste like caramel in the morning. I'm obsessed. Plus, it supports your immunity. It aids in digestion. It boosts energy and it helps balance inflammation. What else do you want out of a honey or out of anything really? And if you want to try it for yourself, now is the time. You've been hearing me talk about Manukora for a while, but right now they're offering you $25 off of their starter kit. So all you have to do is go to manukora.com/bloom. That's manukora.com/bloom. And you'll get $25 off. The starter kit comes with an MGO 850 plus Manuka honey jar, 5 honey travel sticks, a super cute wooden spoon, and a guidebook. I use the wooden spoon and the jar of honey almost every day in my morning coffee. I love the travel sticks because I take them on long weekends with me. They make hotel coffee taste so much better. Get your $25 off a starter kit by going to manukora.com/bloom. That's manukora.com/bloom. We've whet everyone's appetite with why they should be growing aromatics. And I think what you said earlier, that moment when you're in the garden and you catch a whiff of a tomato leaf or your rosemary, there is just nothing freaking better. My mom in our old house planted our pathway with lavender, like the pathway that you walk up to our house. So any guest who came over had to park their car and walk through a lavender pathway to get to our house. And it was so magical. So say I want some plants in my garden that help promote relaxation. What would you recommend me trying?
So many friends, like if you just look at green or something, just plant anyone that you can, but relaxation, you already said lavender, It's known, Lavandula angustifolia and Lavandin, the hybrid, just calming to the nervous system. Chemosensory-wise, it's very calming physiologically to the nervous system. Lemon balm seems to be someone you love. It's shown to be anxiolytic, to work with anxiety, to calm down and actually be kind of sedative. I'd also say lemon verbena. She likes to grow. She's from South America, so she's an annual here. And yes, I'm saying she instead of an it or they. I'm just trying to think, because what I'm thinking, I'm also thinking about the visual sense. When I see an umbel of angelica, and the root is very aromatic, when I see that umbel, I just get really happy. And I just stop and watch all the insects on it. So I'm saying, not even aromatically, I say just plant for something that has a lot of flowers on it. And before we touched on that, because that's relaxing, but we'll get to the energizing stuff too, but just that is relaxing to have those flowers. And that's in that mint family and then the umbel family, the carrot seeds, the fennels, the umbelliferae family.
And are you taking the flowers and putting that and making tea out of that? Or are you taking the leaves in the umbel family?
That's a great question. So it depends on who. Generally, with the umbel family, you're taking the seed. You let it go to seed. But you know what? By the way, I just had Mexican food at Cosme on like in the 20s on this Sunday. They had the cilantro flower in the guacamole. So for your wonderful listeners, like, don't be afraid to go and take the leaf or the flower because it has the flavor. Chives are aromatic. We don't get the essential oil because we're not going to work with that. They're so tasty. Eat the flower.
Oh, I take my chive flowers and I distill them in vinegar. I put them in vinegar and it turns the vinegar purple or pink. It's amazing. Delicious on salads. Okay, what about energy? So I work from home. I like an energizing moment in the afternoon as I've, you know, not seen anyone all day. What plants would you recommend for an energy boost?
So I was looking at some of the greatest hits, I think your folks will know, rosemary. And there's a lot of scientific evidence for working with memory formation and retention and concentration. So rub your hands on the rosemary leaves, take a few leaves and make a tea. Thyme, super energizing, very like thymus, super restorative. You're getting over bronchitis. If you can make yourself a rosemary and thyme tea, forget the essential oil from the herb. You want to, because the aromatics, the molecules are incredibly bacterial. Some are really antimicrobial, very helpful for our health in that sense. Sage, if you can get white sage, super clarifying, super clarifying. That friend likes to grow in the desert, right? So I have to be mindful of that. So we could treat that as an annual in our region. But any of the sages, rub your hands. I have to go back to relaxation. Marjoram, sweet marjoram, a little sweet, soft, actually sleep promoting, really great for menstrual cramps. So are many other plants. But you could just take that and smell it and just see what happens to yourself.
Yeah. And for the listeners listening, she's rubbing her hands like she would be rubbing her hands on the plant and then bringing her hands up to her nose to smell. And I like that too, because that's having an aromatic garden where you're actually leaving the plant. You're leaving the leaves on the plant. You're just going out there, getting the oils on your hand, having a couple of sniffs and going back, you know, inside instead of feeling like you have to harvest and make a tea or harvest and try and make a hydrosol. You can just go outside, give your rosemary a rub and come back in. You know, I go outside and I just like snap off a little, the top of my rosemary plant and I'll bring it back and smell it in my afternoon. You know, I love that.
Can I just say, could you please make a bumper sticker that says, give your rosemary a rub?
Give your rosemary a rub, baby. That's t-shirt material. Give your rosemary a rub. I love that. Well, speaking of rubbing, our conversation isn't centered around this, but I also know that you're an expert in aromatherapy and sensuality and sexuality. So what about plants for connection? Whether it's connecting to yourself, connecting to others, what about that?
Did you see me like, oh my gosh, if you could get your hands on patchouli and if you have bad connotations from high school or college, there are good patchoulis out there. I grow it every year. And patchouli is incredibly sensualizing. My phrase is, it gets into your hips. It helps you bring yourself into your body and relax into your body. Patchouli, hands down. I have like 5 patchoulis in front of me. I have patchouli hydrosol. I distill it every year. It's just gorgeous. I use it as my face toner right now. But clary sage is another one that you could grow. And once that friend comes and sets to seed, you'll keep finding little plants the next year. Clary, it's like euphoria. I've seen it happen in classrooms with classes. It can bring a euphoric effect. So if you want that heightened response, talking about not just sexuality, but sensuality can be really interesting and supportive.
Now, I've never heard of this. Can you say again, clarifying sage?
Clary sage. So the Latin name is Salvia sclarea.
Okay. And it's, can you find it? I'm assuming you're going to grow this guy from seed, because you're not going to find that in like your local garden center.
You probably won't find it in like the big box locals, but if you have an herb specialist in your region, I'm pretty sure they'll be selling clary sage, or go to a seed catalog.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll definitely try that. I mean, you had me at euphoria. Dang, the way you're talking about these plants are incredible.
Well, that's the thing. And just being who, whatever, as an aromatherapist and someone really passionate, it's like my job to try to understand the personality of a plant. Because the aromatics, they all do very similar things. And there are uppers and downers and balancers. But it's like patchouli is different than clary sage and yarrow. And yeah.
You know, patchouli I have only heard of as incense. I have never even thought of patchouli as a plant before, but I'm very curious to try it. That sounds awesome.
So patchouli doesn't mind a little shade, and it doesn't mind a little moisture. So from a planting perspective, and it's definitely an annual for us.
Okay. Yeah, that's great, because I feel like everybody's always trying to figure out what to put in their shade garden, because we're all, you know, trying to grow our 8 hours a day sunshine, tomatoes and normal, you know, herbs and cucumbers and peppers. What are your other favorites? Like, if I was new to aromatic gardening, what else would you recommend people trying? I mean, I loved patchouli, the way you just lit up about patchouli. Like, what other non-culinary herbs? Because I think we've all got our culinary herbs tight in my community. We're growing sage and chives and oregano and thyme. We're growing the culinary herbs. So what, like, non-culinary herbs maybe that I wouldn't have heard of would you recommend us trying?
I'm looking at my oils, but honestly, there's, because I'm sticking with essential oil-bearing plants. There's so many things that we can't grow, like sandalwood. Someone that I really love that's rare to see is Santolina. That's not really culinary, but the deer really don't like it. And it's a part of a Mediterranean garden. So it likes that dry neglect. It will bloom in June around here. And it's, one of them is white and fuzzy, and the animals really don't like that. But so many of them are so to grow. So many of them are so culinary, honestly. I have like a basil looking at me. I don't know. Oh, lemongrass is one, but that's culinary as well.
Yeah. Well, it can be culinary, or maybe just like something that you wouldn't necessarily think to be used from more of a like wellness, aromatherapeutic place.
Well, you mentioned one before, which a lot of us don't grow, and that was your olfactory memory, geranium. And there are so many scented geraniums to grow. And go there. Like, someone will eat them, so be careful. But they are just joyful. And it's the leaves that are the oily parts. And you could just rub them, or you don't even need to rub. You just like walk by and there's a party.
Yeah. When I lived in New York City, I used to babysit for this kid before I started my podcast. And his mom had a rose-scented geranium. And I loved this rose-scented geranium on her windowsill. And I took a cutting of it and I started growing, and it grew like gangbusters. And I used to be a musical theater performer, and I got into the habit of taking one leaf in my audition binder to every audition that I went to. And before I walked into my audition, I would take the leaf out of my binder and smell it before I walked in, because it just like brought me home. It just like reminded me, I don't know, it was just like a sweet little practice that I had. But yeah, the geraniums are really, they're called pelargoniums. But that family of plants, of scented plants, is so magical with all their different kooky scents.
Yeah, and I love how you touched on, literally, this is what I ask people to do for aromatherapy, but what you did with take the leaf and smell it, that is aromatherapy. We don't have to go out and spend money on bottles of oils and all these precious resources it takes. We could do what you did. You're practicing aromatherapy and probably not being like, this is it. Like, that is so powerful.
Yeah. No, yeah. It was a beautiful habit. And sadly, we transplanted that plant in my mom's garden, and sadly, it didn't make it. It got shaded out by some other plants. But I'm always on the hunt for another rose geranium because I definitely want another one. Do you feel like there's a staple plant that everybody should have in their garden if they want to try aromatic gardening?
Yeah, because, you know, I've been just doing this and being a gardener, you're always trying and things move and change and you're always trying and experimenting and learning. Chamomile. I really think if you can have chamomile in your garden, it seems so pedestrian, I think. But to make your own tea and see the insects and those sunny little faces, if you can grow Roman chamomile, it's a carpet, it's a perennial, or the annual German chamomile will just keep showing up all the time, everywhere.
It is a very happy plant, isn't it? It is a very happy plant. I'm growing it right now indoors hydroponically, German chamomile. And the leaves are happy. It's so bushy and like the leaves are little and they're just like so cute. And then you do get these smiley little faces with the flowers. It's a special little plant. So when I'm making tea with German chamomile, am I waiting for the flowers and I'm making tea from the flowers? So I'm not making tea from the leaves.
Correct. Yeah, you want those flowers when they're at their maturation and they start to, it's called metrocaria, the mother, the womb, the flower, all those little flowers start to look like a beehive. Pick it when it's at its prime.
Okay. And then soak it up and drink it. Yeah, I love that. That's not what I thought you would recommend. I love that. I'm happy I asked that question because chamomile, I actually don't think a lot of people grow because it's not as culinary as the other ones are, you know?
Good point. Yeah, it's growing into that. And this is us humans categorizing, but we have our medicinals and our non-medicinals. And we have our like aromatics we're talking about with the essential oils, which fall into the medicinals. But yeah, it's just happy. There's so many plants. I'm going to try to send you some pictures of some of my little guys. But can I just share, it's not really an aromatic, but someone I really love to grow because the deer don't love it, is germander.
Never heard of it.
So it's kind of a traditional, instead of boxwoods, you can start to create like your hedge gardens. And they just have these gorgeous pink flowers. And there's two types of germander, creeping, wall germander, and upright. I love it. It's like a staple in front of my house. And it's just a foundational piece that used to be considered an herb, but people don't really consider it a medicinal herb anymore.
Okay. I love that. Wow. This is making me get really excited. We're doing this interview after you don't have as much snow as we have, but it snowed for 3 days. We've gotten 2 feet of snow. And this conversation is really getting me excited for my herb garden. Herbs are where I started as a gardener, and they continue to be a focus of mine. And I have dreams of a medicinal garden when we move. We're still renting, but you're getting me really excited.
I know we have like a time limit, but there's a poem I'd love to share that I didn't write that just gives me shivers every time I read it, and it's all plant.
Oh my gosh. I would love that. Please do.
All right. This is called The Other Woman by Twyla M. Hansen. She's I think lives in the Midwest. As I picture her, she has no basil, no cumin, no sun-hardened hyssop, nor sage around her eyes. She never catnips, but laughs comfrey, tansy with a primula smile. As I think of her, she's angelica, foxglove and jasmine, somewhat peppermint, not letting you see all her saffron at once. One day I'll meet her, that rue woman, that wild indigo teasel, somewhere neutral, free of woodruff and dropwort, some summer savory. She's the nose set to lavender, eye full of sesame, ear-ringing rosemary. She's wind through wild thyme.
Wow. Wind through wild thyme. That's beautiful. We'll have that poem linked in the show notes for people who might want to go print it out. So good. I love it. Thank you so much for that. Well, if people want to learn more about aromatic gardening, aromatherapy, if they want to work with you, if they want to find more, you know, of your work, where can everyone find you?
Thank you for asking and having me as a guest on your show. Please check out NYC Aromatica for online classes and lots of videos called Plant Talk, where I'm with plants, chatting about them, their growing habits, and so for gardeners. And then please check out Essential Aromatica to geek out with me about aromatherapy stuff.
And this is your podcast, Essential Aromatica Podcast. So if you're listening over here, go click over to Essential Aromatica and see what other aromatherapy nerdy stuff is out there. It's a whole world, you know? So I'm excited to go listen to a couple of your episodes. And this was so fun. I am going to anxiously await my chamomile blooming. There's no blooms yet. And I'll let you know when it blooms and I'll Instagram a tea.
Oh, I love that. Please do. I will do the same.
Cool. And where are you on social media if people want to go follow you?
Thank you. At NYC Aromatica.
NYC Aromatica. Yeah. Awesome talking with you today, Amy. Thanks so much.
It's been beautiful. Thank you, Maria. It's so fun.
Thank you to Amy for that in-depth conversation. I hope you hung in there with us. It was enlightening. You know, I told her I've been drinking my borage tea literally every day. I'm so obsessed with this plant. I can't believe I didn't know about it before, but borage, it's like my favorite plant of the moment. All of Amy's links are in the show notes. She's NYC Aromatica. If you're in New York City, you can go work with her. She also has a podcast, Essential Aromatica Podcast, in case you're interested in learning more about essential oils. And in the show notes, we do have photos of her garden with all of the different plants and labels in case you are curious about learning more about what that gorgeous garden looks like. It is simply breathtaking. For me, in terms of the scented plants I'm excited to grow, I'm growing multiple Hoya that have scented blooms that I'm very excited about. I have my Lettuce Grow farm stand that I have indoors. It's my indoor hydroponic planter that I grow like 24 different edible plants in throughout the winter and summer. I'm growing lettuce, but in terms of the aromatics, I've got all the culinary herbs, really, sage, basil, thyme, oregano, chives. I'm doing chamomile for the first time, which has been really fun and interesting. And the tomatoes are my favorite. I'm growing miniature tomatoes in my lettuce grow farm stand, teensy tiny baby tomatoes. And man, there's just nothing like a tomato leaf for me. And then as I'm currently, when this episode airs, I'm probably planting up my balcony garden. We have a much larger balcony garden now when we live in the Catskills, and I've got about 20 grow bags that last year I grew all sorts of cut flowers and edibles. We're going to grow a multitude of different tomatoes. I'm definitely going to get a few geraniums, herbs, and I'll definitely be planting this beautifully scented sweet alyssum in every grow bag that I plant as a tribute to my friend Melody. That was her favorite plant. Anyway, I digress, plant friends. I'd love to hear what your favorite scented plants are. I'll be posting about this episode and scented plants on social media. If you are on social media, hang over there, shoot me a DM or comment on those posts, letting me know your favorite scented plants so our community can kind of learn from each other. Post in the app if you're a part of the Garden Society app and platform, or you can always just email me at maria@growingjoywithmaria.com. If you ever have ideas for episodes, feedback about episodes, I'm so open. I'm making these podcasts for you, and I want to know what you think. So with that, I hope you go smell some plants this week, plant friends. And until next time, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friend, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure that you're subscribed to the show so you don't miss an episode. We have incredible episodes lined up in 2023, and I don't want you to miss one topic. And while you're subscribing, would you mind clicking over to the review section and leaving us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so I thank you in advance for helping this podcast reach as many planty earbuds as possible across the globe. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got a ton of free options for you. First, there's the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's so fun. It takes literally 3 minutes to complete. You take the test, you get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you, inspired by your results. The link is in the show notes. Make sure to let me know what your personality is after you take the test.
If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, check out my website. We've got a bunch of free guides that you can download on topics like understanding natural light, which is actually a 3-day worksheet, and 9 ways to green up your office if you need to bring a little bit of planty joy into your work life. And finally, I want to invite you to join the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet, my online garden society. It's both a web platform and an iOS and Android app. It allows our listeners to get together in an algorithm and troll-free online space to swap plant care tips, humble brag about plant wins, and get support when you have plant fails. We have monthly live planty show and tells on Zoom, which are so fun, and even have a living library of planty book recommendations sourced from our community. You can go to jointhegardensociety.com to grab your membership. And for anything else, plant friend, I am here for you. Feel free to drop me a line, whether you have an idea for an episode, an event, or maybe you're even a planty business interested in sponsoring the show. And of course, following me on Instagram and TikTok for daily planty silliness, musings, and tips is always recommended. You can find me across socials at Growing Joy with Maria. Thank you again so much for listening. It is truly my honor and life's delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.
Plant care is self-care on Growing Joy, the podcast.
Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible, so I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection.
So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.